Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025 The Game, and this is what I consider to be the official start of the Stillman & Company season. So the Stillman & Company anniversary, or what was obviously once Jared and the GM, the anniversary is August 15th, and we'll still hold to that, but I have always believed that like a school year, the radio show season kicks off when training camp starts. Training camp for the Titans starts tomorrow. I went in this morning, got my COVID test at St. Thomas Sports Park. I mean, it is here, folks. So I've always considered this to be the first show of the brand new season. So Caroline Fenton, as I said in our text message chain today, congratulations and welcome to your first full season here on the program.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here.
Ian is here as well. He's back from vacation. Ian, how are you? How was your vacation?
It was fantastic. Thank you.
Good. Ian, you know this very well. We always do this to kick off training camp week, which, again, training camp starts tomorrow for the Titans. Practice starts on Wednesday. And I will outline exactly how I plan on covering training camp this year because I plan on being all in. So for everybody out there that can't get to practice, I plan on not only being at as many practices as I can be at to recap each one every day, but I also plan TD will be out there, Joe Rexroad will be out there, people we bring on the show will be out there, and we will be dedicated to telling you exactly what has been happening at Titans training camp as they get ready for the season. But this is how we start every season of the show, and that is by officially outlining the expectations for the Tennessee Titans. And we do this in a very meticulous way. We break the schedule up into five different areas. Games we believe the Titans will win, games they should win, toss-up games they should lose, and games they will lose. Now, I feel like I just read off the board in Jeopardy, but that's exactly how we do it. And then we come to our official expectations. So let's start. I'm going to start with my list first. Caroline, you've got your list. Mm-hmm. Ian, get yourself a list because you're a part of this if you don't already have one. We'll start off with the games I believe this year that the Titans will win. So these are games, and again, I think there's a very obvious difference between will win and should win. Games I think they will win: at the Jets, at the Jags, at home versus the Texans, at home versus the Jags, at home versus the Dolphins, and on the road at the Texans. So that's six games I think they will win. I was conflicted with that Dolphins game. I thought about moving that down to should win, but I really think the Dolphins stink. I mean, I think they're not awful, but I don't buy the Dolphins. And so I thought about putting the Dolphins into the should-win category. I put them into the will-win category. That was a pretty liberal decision on my point of using the will-win, should-win category, but I went with the Dolphins. But again, Jets, Jags, Texans, Jags, Dolphins, Texans. They'll win those games. Games they should win. So that's six games that they will win. Games they should win, the second category. At home versus Arizona, I think they should win. At home versus Indianapolis, I think they should win. These next three are a little interesting. At home versus New Orleans, I think they should win. When I think of New Orleans, I think of last year's Patriots team. You lose the star quarterback that kept everything going for the last decade. And yeah, you got some good players here, some good players there. The cap has crunched the Saints. I don't think they're going to be great. Jameis Winston at quarterback, I don't think he's the answer. I believe in the coach, but it's hard to believe that last year Bill Belichick wasn't going to coach the Patriots to at least a winning record. And they were 7-9 because they just weren't very good. So I think New Orleans at home should win. At New England, I think they should win. Let's not get caught up in what we've known of the Patriots for the last handful of years. The Patriots were not good last year, especially at the end. They were terrible. And it was obvious Cam Newton wasn't the answer. Rodney Harrison was saying it hurt him to watch Cam play. And then they re-signed Cam. Now, Mac Jones might be the quarterback then, and I will say this, same with New Orleans, but more so with the Patriots, I'm never going to count that coach out. I am never going to count Bill Belichick out. He's the greatest coach of all time. And so because of that, I don't think they're going to be awful this year. But I think if we're talking about one of the better teams in the AFC, and that's what we think the Titans are, I think they should win at New England. Here's another should win. At Pittsburgh, I think they should win. Pittsburgh is a mess. Their offensive line is retired or gone. Their running game has no real answer except for drafting Najee Harris. And now he's not getting the vaccine, and that's going to be an issue in that locker room. Ben is old. Ben is hurt. Ben is ineffective. Ben is fat. I mean, I think there are a lot of issues. Their new offensive coordinator, they lost a lot in free agency this year. I love Tomlin. I think he's a good coach, and I have changed my opinion on Tomlin over the years, but I don't think Pittsburgh's going to be very good this year. I think it's going to be very clearly Baltimore and Cleveland over here in that division and Pittsburgh and Cincinnati over here. And so I think they should win at Pittsburgh. And then this was another one that I thought maybe was a little iffy. At home versus the 49ers, I think they should win, because even if it's Jimmy or Trey Lance, neither guy should beat the Titans. So that's games they should win. Arizona, Indianapolis, New Orleans, New England, Pittsburgh, 49ers. That's six. I have two toss-up games. At Indianapolis, at the Rams. Cam Akers tearing his Achilles last week, for me, was what moved the Rams from should lose to a toss-up game in L.A. Titans are never good on the West Coast. Sunday night football game. But I'm not buying the Rams hype. I have two games they should lose, versus Buffalo at home and versus Kansas City at home. I really wanted to put Kansas City into the will lose category, but remember the last time they played at Nissan Stadium? Titans won that game. Remember when they went in the playoffs a couple of years ago to Kansas City? Titans won that game. Remember when Kansas City had a great team in 2016? Titans went on the road to Kansas City. Titans won that game. So there's something about the Chiefs, there's something about Andy Reid where they usually fare pretty well. And because the game's at home, I'm going to say should lose. So that's versus Buffalo, versus Kansas City, they should lose. I have one game they will lose, at Seattle. They will not win that game. Week two on the road at Seattle. Titans are never good on the West Coast. You're going to Seattle, the hardest place to play. It's going to be almost 2 years since Ryan Tannehill played in front of a full crowd. The Seahawks have the loudest, most raucous crowd in the NFL. They're going to be doubly pumped if they're out there this season. Russell Wilson's going to tear that defense apart. I don't think Seattle's that much better than the Titans. I just think the idea of the Titans going to Seattle and beating the Seahawks just doesn't really add up. So I have one will-lose game. I have six games they'll win. Six they should win, two toss-ups, two they should lose, one they will lose. Caroline, what's your list?
So I went by week.
Okay.
Arizona, I said a should win. Can the Titans, I think the first game of the season could set the Titans back a little bit with Bud Dupree being on the PUP list. But I think that the Titans overall are a better team than Arizona. Week two, I put Seahawks as a should lose. You mentioned them playing not very well on the West Coast, and I'll get back to that when I get to the Rams. But the only thing that kind of pulled me from a will-lose to a should-lose is that Seattle's defense just isn't great. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, when you look at the wide receiver duo, that's one wide receiver duo that could rival the Titans as one of the best in the NFL. Week three. So I was fairly conservative with my list, but with Indianapolis, I had kind of a bold prediction. Week three against Indianapolis, I had a will win.
I will win?
The Titans will win that game.
I mean, like, I'm not totally comfortable with having the Dolphins as a will win.
So I have the Titans as a will win on week three, and I'll fast forward to week eight at Indianapolis. The Titans will lose that game.
So, yeah, I mean, you're really digging in on these Indy games.
Yes, the Indy games were really the only ones that I was pretty bold about and pretty adamant about, I think. Week three, the Titans are going to have enough experience underneath their belt. I think they're going to have a little bit more health with some of these guys that are iffy going into the start of the season. So I think they will win that first game. I think they will lose that second game. I will be shocked if Indianapolis and Tennessee don't split that series. I think in week eight, you're looking at Week 6, Buffalo. Week 7, Kansas City. Week 8, Indianapolis. That is tough. You've got two really tough games back-to-back, and I think that the Titans are going to go into that game a little bit banged up, injured, and I just don't see a world where the Titans and Indianapolis don't split that series. But I'll go back to Week 4 at New York Jets. They'll win that game. They absolutely will win that game, and I think that is going to be a poster for the Titans offense. I think that Derrick Henry can rush for season high in that game. I think that Ryan Tannehill can go off for 300 yards. That's going to be a great game for the Titans. Jacksonville will win. Rookie quarterback, huge. I mean,
yeah, we don't need an explanation on Jacksonville.
Okay, great.
Honestly, like,
Buffalo should lose. I think it's going to be an offensive battle. The over-under for that game is 52.5. Take the over. I think it's going to be an offensive battle. Week 7, will lose. I have that as a will-lose game. I think Kansas City just has far too many upside, and I think in almost every single position group, Kansas City has the advantage. Week 8, I said Indianapolis will lose. And then I go to Week 9, L.A., should lose. You have that as a top toss-up game, and you mentioned the Titans not playing very well on the West Coast. They have a tough drag there with Buffalo, Kansas City, Indianapolis, and then traveling again to the West Coast for the second time in the season. I think that's going to bang the Titans up a little bit. But the X factor, you mentioned Cam Akers. I think Matthew Stafford. Everyone's very high in Matthew Stafford in L.A. I'll believe it when I see it. Week 10, Saints should win. I was up between a should win and a will win with that, but I think with no Mike Thomas, probably in that week. I think that'll be in the Titans' favor. Week 11, Texans will win, obviously. Week 12, New England, I have as a should win. And I think the quarterback situation in New England will be a toss-up there as well. But I think with Cam or Mac at quarterback, the Titans are going to be okay. And then we're week 13 bye. Week 14, Jacksonville will win. Week 15, Pittsburgh should win. I lean towards will win. People are very high on Pittsburgh this year.
I am not.
I'm not buying it. I'm not high on Big Ben. I mean, Juju doesn't do it for me. They also took a huge step back on defense. And then you're looking at week 16, 49ers. I have it as a should win. Miami was also a toss-up between will win, should win. I lean towards should win just because I don't know what Tua can do in this sophomore year of his. But
I think there's a lot of uncertainties about Miami because a lot of people don't care about Miami.
I think that's probably fair. I don't think anyone's been talking about Miami in the offseason. And then week 18, Houston will win.
So if I counted this right, you have no toss-ups?
No. I initially had 49ers possibly as a toss-up. I had L.A. possibly as a toss-up, but should lose, I lean toward for the Rams, and should win, I lean to for the 49ers.
Ian, let's run through your list quickly. Will win, should wins, toss-ups, will lose, should lose.
Okay. Will win at the Jets, at the Jags, versus the Texans, versus the Jags, at the Texans. So the two in the division and the Jets. Should win versus Dolphins versus 49ers versus Saints. Toss up. Both versus Indy versus Arizona, at the Rams, at the Patriots, at Pittsburgh. Should lose at Seattle versus the Bills. Will lose versus Kansas City.
Okay. All right. Now here's how we set the official expectations. You ready for this?
Yes.
There's a very scientific way. Everybody count up your will wins, your should wins, your toss-ups, your should lose, your will lose. For me, that's 6 will wins, 6 should wins, 2 toss-ups, 2 should lose, 1 will lose. Take your should wins and your will wins, add them together. Take your should lose and your will lose, add them together, and split the toss-ups. So for me, I got 6 will wins, 6 should wins, that's 12. 2 toss-ups, that's 13. 13-4 for the Tennessee Titans. That's my expectation going into this year. They will win at the Jets, at the Jags, the Texans, the Jags, the Dolphins, the Texans. They should win Arizona, Indianapolis at home, New Orleans at New England, at Pittsburgh, at San Francisco. They'll toss up at Indy, at the Rams. They should lose at home to Buffalo and Kansas City. They will lose on the road to Seattle. 13-4, first in the AFC South.
I have 12 total should wins and will wins. I have 7 should wins, 5 will wins, and I have 2 should loses, 3 will loses. I have the Titans going 12-5 this season.
12-5. Ian, what's your official expectation record?
11-6.
11-6. Okay. So that's how we're starting the show. 615-737-1025 is your phone number, your reaction. This is how we start every season. By going over the games they will win, should win, toss up, should lose, will lose. I'm going 13-4. 13-4 on the Titans. Caroline 12-5. Ian 11-6. So it is a very, you know, standard drop each time. I will say this. I want to discuss Ian's list a little bit more on the other side, because he's got a lot of toss-ups in there. So we'll do that next. 615-737-1025. Your reaction. And here's the question. Are our expectations fair? All of us go with double-digit wins. I go with 13-4. That's really good in the NFL. 13-3, we talked about this last week. That's an elite-level team. I'm going 13-4 with this Titans team. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We will get to your reaction. We are live from the wholesaling studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Stillman & Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025 The Game, and of course, we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Considering the coordinator change and some of the other personnel changes, how important has this time on the field this spring been to the foundation of what you want? And is it fair to say that you know more about your team, even with all those changes at this point this year, than you did last year, considering it was all Zoom?
Yeah, I mean, last year, we really can't compare much to last year, and would rather not, you know, begin to make comparisons between year to year. But nothing beats being able to get with a group of players and coach them and try to get and see improvement and show them improvement, you know, things that are going to help them and their progress and development. You know, and just being out there as a football team. This is the game and the life that we've chosen. You know, it's played with a group of people that have to come together and try to figure each other out and figure out how each other operates and all work within a system and trying to do and function as a football team and bring three faces together. And, you know, that'll take more, you know, more time in training camp, but it's always good to be able to work and coach players.
There you go. That was Mike Vrabel. He does it for real tomorrow. Opening press conference. The team checking in. Today we were checking in. Got my COVID test. And let me say this. I've had some COVID tests done in my life. This was the most pain-free COVID test I've ever had in my entire life.
Good.
It was just like a little just circle around the top of the nose. If you're looking at the nose, I'm putting my thumb near my nose. I'm not putting it in my nose. But it was just like right around the nose, and it was just a little, okay, you know. The ones I've had other places are like touching your brain.
It's your brain. It's getting up there in your prefrontal cortex.
Like right to that brain stem.
Yeah.
And so did not have that today, but training camp is among us. And as we always start every year when it's time for training camp week, we start off with the official expectations. Games that they will win, should win, toss up, should lose, will lose. And then we bring it all together. I'm going 13-4. That is elite. Now, we got into this discussion last week. Is 13-4 the new 13-3 or is it the new 12-4? I think after doing this exercise, it's the new 12-4. I think 13-4 is the new 12-4. Because I think if the Titans go 13-4 this year, I don't think they're going to be a top seed and get a bye. Now, maybe they're the number two or number three seed. I doubt they'd be the number four seed. But, I mean, I think 13-4 is elite-level football. Caroline's 12-5. That, look at that as the new 11-5. That's what they were last year. But maybe the schedule's a little bit more difficult, so I could account for that. Ian goes 11-6. That's still, if we're thinking that this is drop it down a notch, that's still 10-6 from the past. That's still good. 10-6 almost every year should get you into the playoffs, especially now that there are seven teams. Do we think these are fair expectations for the Titans? Do we think that this is how the fans feel, that they are either an elite-level team or a for sure this team should make the playoffs kind of team from where we sit? Because I've done radio in different places. So I've done radio here when the Titans were the worst team in the league, and getting to 9-7 with Marcus Mariota at quarterback and Mike Mularkey as the coach was like a miracle season. I've been here where everybody thought this was a playoff team. They went 9-7. They barely got to the playoffs, and everybody was upset, and they wanted to fire the coach. I've been in other places, like when I was in New England, in New Hampshire, and everybody just knew that team was going to the playoffs. I mean, there was no question. The year that I was in the Boston area, there was no question if that football team was going to make the playoffs. Nobody ever talked about having a team good enough for the playoffs or a team not good enough for the playoffs. I mean, I think we're all sitting here today thinking this is a team that's going to the playoffs. I mean, I think that we are, and everybody will always tell you in football that when it comes to injuries, that nothing can be predicted. I agree. The Patriots in 2007 were the best team that I've ever seen in my entire life. The next year, Tom Brady got hit in the knee by Bernard Pollard, tore his ACL. The Patriots were no longer the best team I've ever seen in my entire life. It is totally capable with anybody. But where we sit today, I mean, we are, I think, in a 7-team playoff, 13-4, 12-5, 11-6, we are comfortably saying the Titans are going to make the playoffs this year. And even though that defense was trash last year, no bones about it. Do you think that's fair?
I do think that's fair. And of course, barring any sort of injury, but going into the season knowing what we know now, I think my only concern is that I have very few Will wins on my list. A majority of my wins in my 12-5 in the win column are should wins. So that makes me a little bit nervous because things can always happen. I mean,
sure.
If the Buffalo Bills probably looked at the Titans last year and said, we'll win. And they didn't.
I have a hard time, though. Like, I look at my will wins where I have six. Mm-hmm. Jets, Jags, Texans, Jags. Like Jets,
those feel
Jags,
like a done deal.
So you get four games you should freaking win this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just four given to you with the Texans and the Jags. The Jets are in the same boat. Rookie quarterback, team sucks, new coach, early in the season, you ought to win that game. Like, there should be no excuse for losing to the Jets this year.
Yes,
100%. And no excuse for losing to the Texans or the Jags. I have the Dolphins in there. I, you know, the more I talk this through, when I was putting this list together, I was like, yeah, we'll win with Dolphins. Like, it felt kind of cocky to put we'll win with the Dolphins. But the game was in Nashville in, I believe, December. And Miami is never good at leaving the you know, South Beach. They're never good leaving there.
January 2nd, even more, January.
January, yeah. You know, like that Dolphins.
It's gonna be freezing.
The Dolphins are never any good anywhere outside of Fort Lauderdale come December, January. So I put it in we'll win. Then I listened to Ian's list, and I'm like, you know, all the things in my head that I think of when I do this. And Ian's throwing out New Orleans into the toss-ups, Pittsburgh into the toss-ups, 49ers into the toss-ups.
I think that's all
indies,
fair.
Both Indy games into the toss-ups. And I'm like, you know what? Like, if we're doing this list on the radio in Indianapolis, there is no way that they are having only one Indy game in the toss-up like I have. And no way they're putting Indy, you know, talking about the Titans if we're in Indianapolis, no way are they looking at the Titans as a should-lose or will-lose like how you're saying they will win against Indianapolis at home early in the season. And then I wonder, like, are the expectations a little too high? Are we a little too cocky? Ian, is this like, is my 13-4 this year, like when I demanded the year they ended up in the AFC Championship game, I would like to add, when I demanded that whole offseason that they go 12-4? I mean, I looked at it at 12. I said, this team should be 12-4. Not going over the record, not, you know, going the schedule. I'm just, you know, when I think of what a really good team is, when I think of like a team that is, you know, you're a playoff team. Okay. You know, that could be 9-7. That could be 10-6. That could be when you're 12-4, you're good. And that's going into the 2019 season. I was like, all right, enough with the 9-7s. It's time to be good. Mm-hmm. And boy, people got mad. Oh my goodness, did they get mad? And when they didn't start off well, everybody said, 12-4, Jared, 12-4. And the 12-4 was only just, you know, just throwing it out there like, yo, this is how good I think they should be. And they ended up in the AFC Championship game. That's what I'm talking about. Like, that's what a 12-4 team does. And so, 13-4. Ian, is this like 12-4 a couple years ago? Or do you think this is more valid? If Floyd were here today and I said 13-4, now, we know he, you know, talking about games.
Four losses is tough, you know, through a whole season to only have four losses. I think if the defense last year were just a little bit better last year, mm-hmm. and you could see maybe a more path to improvement just a little bit, I think it would be a little bit more fair. Just with the question marks on defense, I do wonder if that's a little bit high. But I don't know.
Well, I had 12-5, so I'm not totally far off of you, but four losses, especially when you have some tough road games and long road trips, you don't give yourself a ton of cushion there. I think 12-5 gave me a little, just a little bit more cushion for the Titans to possibly drop a game that maybe they shouldn't have. For example, that Indianapolis game, that second game that I think, I mean, if you look at it on paper, Tennessee, I think, has more talent. But you look at the circumstance that the Titans are going to be going through at that time, and it's going to be a really difficult road ahead of them. So I think 13-4, I don't think it's completely crazy. I don't think that you are you're delusional in thinking that. But I think that if we're going to think a little bit more realistically, give yourself a little bit more wiggle room.
I think everybody else also likes the Colts more than I like the Colts.
I think that's fair as well.
Like, I just don't buy this team. I do not buy the Colts. I think Jonathan Taylor is good.
He is good.
I think they got so many problems right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they have so many problems that I have a hard time seeing the Colts as a legitimate contender and a threat to the Titans in this division. But we'll take your calls. We'll get your reaction in on it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Ian brought up the defense. And I do want to kind of investigate how we, you know, when we set these high expectations for the Titans, where are we on the defense? Plus, the Titans made an addition on defense as well. We'll touch on that. Stillman and Company right here. We are live again from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Let me tell everybody that I think this is a... Yeah, this is a ticket giveaway. We'll do that in a little bit. We'll do a ticket giveaway later today. Blue Raider Blitz is rolling across the mid-state to a town near you, led by Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders football coach Rick Stockstill. This community-wide event will be guaranteed fun for the whole family. Each of the stops will include food, ticket giveaways, and a chance to mix and mingle with MTSU coaching staffs and Lightning. For more information on where you can attend, go to blueraiders.com/tour.
Mike, I do wonder how much, with the players gone now, the coaching staff will get to focus on the opponents that are upcoming, maybe to get a little pre-study in before you guys have to start making game plans. And if you could, maybe the Colts have added a new quarterback and you guys have been very competitive with them over the last couple of years. What kind of challenges do you see, you know, in the division and building up this year?
You know, I think we're always conscious of who we play, but, you know, I mean, you could go overboard and start looking at teams down the road, and it could be drastically different. You know, we're going to get film of everybody. You know, maybe your early opponents that we haven't played in the past, or they have new coordinators, and you're trying to piecemeal together what they might do. Right now is a lot of time focusing, you know, on what we're doing, and yes, we're conscious of what other teams are doing, but we have to improve the Titans and make sure that we're as good as we could possibly be, you know, and then continue to take a look at, you know, what we're doing against everybody else. And yeah, you mentioned the Colts, and, you know, obviously very familiar with Jacksonville and Houston, and, you know, how competitive it's been, you know, in our division the last couple of years.
That was Mike Vrabel, and I know this sounds crazy, but I'm writing off the Texans. I'm writing off the Jags. I think if I had to bet as to which team I'm more worried about between those two, I would say Jacksonville. Houston's terrible. I mean, like, Houston is, that defense is awful. I have no idea. David Culley, I have no idea if that guy can coach. Deshaun showed up. You know, they're trying to use the media in order to get somebody to pay something preposterous for Deshaun Watson. I saw today that somebody said Houston wants 3 first-rounders and a starter in return for Deshaun Watson. What? Like, let's think about this for a second. Just, and I'm going to put this bluntly, because sometimes I think in order to squash, like, long-winded content segment filling, you know, Adam Schefters, those kind of people that will talk about, well, this is what I'm hearing the Texans want, and you would have to think that that's a lot for an NFL team to believe, because if they do, then they... So I'm just going to say it like this.
Okay.
You tell me an NFL team's going to invest 3 first-round picks in a guy who might be a rapist, I have a hard time seeing that being a possibility.
Question for you. In a different world, if none of this ever came out about Deshaun, do you think that's reasonable?
I think Deshaun Watson is the starting quarterback of the New York Jets if nothing had come out. And I think it's either the Jets or the Panthers. I think one of those two teams finds a way to lure Deshaun. And I say the Jets or the Panthers because, for example, if the Jets had been offered a lot for Sam Darnold before they saw Zach Wilson's pro day and shoulder injury, would they not have made that move early knowing that Wilson was their guy? And I wonder if they held on to Darnold because they viewed him as a way to, as insurance, that, hey, we can deal this second overall pick or we can use it in negotiations to get a Deshaun Watson, knowing that we can say to ourselves, well, fine, we'll just use the pick and we'll take Zach Wilson. Or, fine, if you don't want it, then whatever. Banking on Deshaun, not getting Deshaun, and then taking the quarterback and saying, okay, let's go in that direction. Because if you knew you were going to move on from Darnold and draft the quarterback second overall, wouldn't you have done that when before Indy had filled their spot, before you know other teams had decided what they were going to do at that position, whereas it felt like they waited and waited and waited and waited and waited, and then they traded Sam Darnold, and I think Deshaun was a big factor in that. And I think that for Darnold and Carolina, for them to say, okay, we're committed to going with Darnold, they had San Francisco had to jump up, and they had to know they weren't going to get a quarterback to fall to them, though they could have had Fields. And I think that told you that I think those two teams, and maybe even Denver, who I think was picking at 8 or 9, that Denver was probably holding out on the Watson front as well. So, yes, I think everything's different if Deshaun Watson doesn't have these allegations coming out. That having been said, all of this talk that is going around about wanting 3 ones in return, that is all that is talk, because, again, you're not going to give up. You're not going to invest everything you have into somebody when the guy might be a rapist. Like, they are investigating whether or not that's the case. You're not going to do that. In this NFL, you are not. No, I don't think anybody today is trading a first-round pick for Deshaun Watson.
No.
Because I don't think
we don't even know if he's going to play. We don't even know if he's going to be in prison.
You have to prove that you're not going to be in prison in order for me to trade a first-round pick for you. We got some thoughts on, again, our list that have been starting off the show, our expectations, games they will win, games they should win, toss-up games should lose, will lose. I'm going my official expectations this year at 13-4. Caroline 12-5, Ian 11-6. Let's go to your phones. Text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caroline, what do we have in there?
Cody texts in and says, don't sleep on the Jags. They may be this year's Bengals. We don't know what Trevor Lawrence is, nor do we know what Urban Meyer's offense will look like in the NFL. They have talented pieces on both sides of the ball, but lack experience and depth.
Ian, are we sleeping on the Jags by saying the Titans will beat them this year?
Maybe a tad. I think we're maybe sleeping on them a little bit. Not that they're saying that the Titans should win, because I believe most people would pick the Titans to win. But we kind of have a feeling it could be an easy pushover. At least that's the way we kind of talk about it, like just guaranteed easy pushover. And, you know, you never know. It's going to be interesting. We'll see how Lawrence looks, but I don't know. Maybe just a tad.
Caroline, are we overlooking the Jags?
I don't think so. If we were looking at this year's Jags the same way that, you know, if, let's say it's 2022, 2023. If we're looking at the Jags the same way, then I think we're overlooking them. I think the Jags have an incredibly high upside a few years down the road. They just need more time. I think Urban Meyer needs more time in that team. I think Trevor Lawrence needs more time to develop within that offensive scheme. So this year, I don't think we are, but moving forward, I'll reevaluate.
I will say this about Jacksonville. I feel very confident about the game early in the season that the Titans will win that game. Very confident. Mm-hmm. I think there is a more likely than not chance that Urban fails in Jacksonville. Like, I just don't think, I do not think Urban is cut out for the pros. And I think we've seen some early indications on, you know, he tries to hire the strength coach who, again, things you don't want in your NFL locker room, you can get guys that smoke some pot. You can get some guys that have some issues in their past and, you know, some domestic issues. And I don't like it, but, you know, look, there are teams around the league that have that.
A little bit of dirty laundry.
There's, yeah, you can get away with that. You can't have a couple of things in your locker room. You can't have rapists and you can't have racists. And you go hire the strength coach from Iowa who the players at Iowa were accusing of racism. Like, you're not at all thinking, hey, this is probably not a good idea for the organization. So Urban screwed that up. Then there's the Tebow thing, where Urban doesn't see the downside to how ridiculous this all is. And then there's always like these little comments or little things that come out that Urban says that I look at and I think, this guy, I don't understand it, because so many college coaches have failed in that transition from college to the pros. And it's always the same thing. It's like, yes, you can't micromanage everything. In college, you can micromanage anything you want. You can micromanage every coach every day. You can micromanage what the kids do, what classes they take, which girlfriends they have, where they eat. You can't do that with grown men. You can't have a grown man making $9 million and you telling him what to do. Like, his conversations with people on a day-to-day basis are not like, oh, yeah, do you want to go to the dining hall to eat, or do you want to go to, like, a Buffalo Wild Wings off campus to eat? Their conversations are like, should we buy that investment property out in Guam? Like, they can have those discussions. And I don't think college coaches sometimes understand that. They want to micromanage everything. It never works. And then there's the college coach that goes to the pros and is like, yeah, man, I'm hands off, baby. And I look at Urban, and I think Urban has all these examples of guys that couldn't do it the college way in the pros, and he's still going to try to do it the college way in the pros. He brings in Tebow. He thinks, oh, you know, Tebow's such a good leader for camp, this will be so nice. And there's going to be somebody in there who's making $6 million bucks who's going to look at him and go, man, he sucks. And they're going to just be done with it. So I truly think, I think there's a more likely than not chance that long-term Urban fails in Jacksonville. I think there is a chance that Lawrence is the guy, that he like is the man, Andrew Luck, that he is Peyton Manning, that he is, and that they'll still win some games because of it. People forget, when Peyton first got in the league and won some games, he had Jim Mora Sr. as his coach. So it's doable to do with a bad coach. And not that Mora Sr. was a bad coach, he was just a little eccentric. But I still don't consider the Jags a threat. Like, that being said, that I am understanding of the possibility that Jacksonville could eventually grow into a good team with Lawrence as their quarterback, I still don't view them as a threat.
Not yet. And to your point about the micromanaging, I agree with you to an extent, but I think if there is any quarterback right now in the NFL that would be okay with it, it's Trevor Lawrence.
It's not about micromanaging the quarterback, though I don't love that either. You have to micromanage a rookie quarterback who's going to play. Like, you have to tell the rookie quarterback, you know, Sean McVay style, you know, all right, Jared, we're going to see that blitzer right there? Yeah, throw it to Bob. All right. You know, like, I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
It's micromanaging everything. It's micromanaging the coaches. It's not letting them coach. You know, you go back to Jeff Fisher, for example. This is the one thing where I think Jeff Fisher actually is pretty good. Jeff Fisher's good at hands-off. You know, Chris Sanders was talking about that a couple of weeks ago, about how Jeff Fisher, when he played for him with the Titans, Jeff was very hands-off. Because Jeff looked at it like, okay, I've hired all these guys to coach. So when you talk to people that played on the old Titans or coached on the old Titans or whatever, they'll talk to you about all those assistant coaches that were there. And, oh, man, Jim Washburn, the defensive line coach, he was one of the best. And then all of a sudden you see Kevin Carter and Javon Kearse and Albert Haynesworth and Kenny Holmes and Josh Evans and all these great players. And you're like, okay, you know, that kind of makes some sense. And Washburn would just drill them. Offensive line, Mike Munchak. We know he's one of the best offensive line coaches maybe in the history of the NFL. And so in the NFL, you got to let the coaches coach. And I just don't know if Urban's ready to do that. I don't know if Urban's ready to just let the coaches coach. And that's where I think the micromanaging becomes an issue. Or telling people what to do. Like, not just Lawrence, but everybody. Like, you're not going to tell a guy making $16.5 million what he should do. Mike Vrabel knows this because he played.
Mm-hmm.
And he played at a high level. And I think this is one of his strengths, is relating to the players. Mike's not telling Derrick Henry what to do. Like, Phil Jackson would talk to Michael Jordan, but he's not telling Michael what to do. Michael is dictating what to do. I think I read, like, I was reading the Tim Grover book, who is Michael's trainer. And Doug Collins was asked what play they ran for Michael to hit a game-winning shot one time. And Michael said, and Doug Collins said, it was a really interesting play. It was called Give Michael the Ball and Get the Bleep Out of the Way. And Tim Grover says, the greats don't need to be told what to do. Like, yeah, Andy Reid calls the plays, but he doesn't tell Mahomes, hey, I want you to run around for 45 seconds and then uncork a rocket down the field to Byron Pringle. That's just what he does. What else we got in the text?
Ben texts in and says, Ian's record prediction is much more realistic considering how difficult the schedule could be. I can't see the Titans going 13-4 with how questionable this defense is, which could cost them games this season.
Okay, but how many really good teams are on this schedule? I mean, I get it, but like we just crapped on the division for 10 minutes. Like, how many good teams are actually on this schedule?
But three, it's not four. The divisional games that I'm worried about, right?
Sure.
Kansas City, Buffalo, L.A.
Like, how good do you guys think Seattle and L.A. are?
Seattle.
Seattle's
good. I think
good.
They're okay.
L.A.'s pretty good, I think.
I think I would say Seattle's a little bit higher on my list than L.A.
Now
but
you
good.
You do know L.A. just went on the road and beat Seattle in the playoffs.
Right now.
Like last year, L.A. with Jared Goff, and then Goff was hurt, and they played the backup, and the backup got hurt, and then Goff won the game. And they went on the road, and they beat Seattle. I'm not saying that they're better than Seattle, but...
In my mind, where I am right now, I would rank the Seahawks above L.A.
I mean, I think the Seahawks are like the Titans in the sense that they're a good team, but they're really flawed. Like, they're really flawed. The Titans are flawed because of the defense. So when it comes to the idea about, you know, with this tough schedule, take the name brand out of it. Just like if we were talking about the SEC and we were talking about, all right, who are the best teams in the SEC going forward? Well, like Texas has to factor in there somewhere. But right now, Texas kind of sucks.
It's not very good, yeah.
No. So forget about the name brands. New Orleans? I mean, New Orleans?
They're not.
New England,
I do not think New
Pittsburgh,
Orleans is going to be good this year.
49ers. Those are the four teams. New Orleans, Patriots, Pittsburgh, 49ers. And I think all of those teams are going to be below what everybody else thinks they are. 49ers are a wild card here because they can never stay healthy. So if they do stay healthy, they end up in the Super Bowl. And if they don't stay healthy, they're terrible. But those are teams that I think that this texter's looking at on the schedule and saying, this is a better schedule. Everybody, Buffalo and Kansas City, everybody has a Buffalo and Kansas City they have to play this year. The Rams and Seahawks are okay, and they're on the road, so that scares me a little bit. But again, like New Orleans, New England, Pittsburgh, 49ers, eh. I mean, I don't think the 2021 versions of those teams do not scare me very much.
That's what I was going to say. If this was the Titans' 2018 schedule,
sure.
Then it's a whole different story.
Sure. Andrew Luck's on the Colts. The Texans aren't terrible. In fact, the Texans are pretty good. You know, San Francisco at that point was kind of bad, but then they ended up at the Super Bowl the next year.
New England, New Orleans, very good. Pittsburgh, good.
The Rams ended up in the Super Bowl. Yes, I would agree with you. Then this schedule in 2018 is a lot worse than this schedule here in 2021. 615-737-1025, more your reaction, plus an addition the Titans made that I'm not sure is a big deal, but I like their thinking. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, it's ESPN 1025, the game. Breaking news from Adam Schefter on ESPN. The Packers are offering concessions and are close to an agreement that would bring Aaron Rodgers back to Green Bay for at least this season, sources tell ESPN. Deal is not done, but it is close. Schefter saying, over the past weekend, the two sides were able to reach mutually agreed upon terms that are close to convincing Aaron Rodgers to abandon plans he had to skip training camp and instead return for it. Concessions, according to Schefter, do not include more money. Schefter says the new agreement, once finalized, would help set up Aaron Rodgers' departure from Green Bay after this season, per sources. So, they're not going to give Aaron any more money, but Aaron will be free to leave Green Bay after this year. This was the deal, according to Adam Schefter. Now, he teased that they'll have more details at the top of the hour on ESPN. Ian will be all over those, so we'll be able to give them to you when they come through. Let me say this. I believe the Green Bay Packers have won. We've talked about this. The things that we thought we knew about Aaron and there was no exit strategy for Aaron Rodgers. once he decided not to opt out for the season, which I think was July 2nd or July 3rd or somewhere around then, when players could opt out for COVID reasons and Aaron could have opted out of COVID concerns and not played this year, and it would have been his right in the league. Once Aaron Rodgers didn't do that, it was obvious that he was going back to the Packers one way or another. I mean, I will be real. Once I found out that Aaron had to pay Green Bay $40 million if he didn't show up back of that signing bonus, even if he retired, I knew that wasn't much of an option. And you hear all these stances that Aaron's taking. Aaron won't return if this, or Aaron won't return if that, or Aaron. And I think, you know what this is? Aaron Rodgers' relationship with the Packers is like that of his relationship with his family, where he gets mad about something that he probably did that he perceives as a slight, and then he says, I am taking my ball and going home. And you can do that with your family when you don't have to pay them $40 million back. Aaron would have to pay Green Bay $40 million back, and they wouldn't allow him to go to another team. Well, that's not going to work. So the mother-in-law can say whatever she wants. The actress, I've never heard of, but I hear she's very famous. She can say whatever she wants. Aaron can be mad. He can offer the non-answers on the TNT golf matchup. But at the end of the day, pride, which is the number one thing that Aaron Rodgers clearly prioritizes above anything else, Aaron's going to lose because he's going back to the Packers. And ultimately, these are on the Packers' terms. Now, I told you that they were going to come to some sort of an agreement that will make it look like Aaron won the negotiation somehow. But he didn't. He didn't. Green Bay the whole time said, here's the deal. Either you're coming or you're not. And now they're gonna come up with some fakakta plan that'll make it look like, hey, you know, as Adam Schefter said, concessions. Conceding what? Like, conceding what? This was the plan the whole time. Green Bay is going to get what they want, and Aaron loses. And Aaron has too much pride. It's going to ruin the Packers season this year. Aaron has too much pride to let it go. The Aaron and Davante Adams Instagram posts, you know, the Instagram stories of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen dabbing each other up. Tim Grover, I'm reading his book. Tim Grover posted that. He's Michael Jordan's longtime trainer, trained Scottie too, trained Kobe. You know, just the greats, has a book about winning and a winner's mindset. Basically, the key to the book is you can fool everybody. You can lie to everybody. But if you don't put the work in, you're not going to win at whatever you're trying to do. And you can't lie to winning. And Tim Grover put up and said, Michael and Scottie won 6 titles together. Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers have 0 titles together in Green Bay. Winning never lies. So that's my reaction, I guess, to the Aaron news. This is what I thought was going to happen the whole time. They were going to make something up that makes it look like Aaron wins the negotiation. He didn't. He lost. And he's going back to Green Bay. Your thoughts?
I am not surprised by this. I really did think that in the initial Aaron Rodgers saga that it would eventually dissipate and he would bend the knee and he would end up in a Packers uniform. But after he declined that contract extension that would make him the highest paid player, not just quarterback, player in the NFL, I thought, okay, he's done. He's either retiring or you will see him in another uniform. I was leaning toward retiring even. I thought, okay, I mean, he has plenty of money. He doesn't need any more money. He has plenty of other opportunities. So
but
I
giving money back is different.
Giving my paying not even just a little bit of money. I mean, the training camp, the practice money,
$50,000 a day. Okay,
and the $400,000 bonus that he had tacked on for practice or OTAs, whatever it was. I wasn't surprised by that. The $40 million, I thought it is going to be tough for him to swallow his pride to do it.
Yeah, like Warren Buffett doesn't want to pay back $40 million. This is Aaron Rodgers. I look at it and I never thought he was gutsy enough to pay back the $40 million bucks. That was the one
but
calculation.
But I also thought,
I
I think that he is that steadfast in his beliefs and wanting to win that he is willing to do it. That I'll say that's fine.
Are you think he's really that dedicated to winning? Like, and when by winning, I mean like winning football games. Or do you mean winning, like, winning
this argument? I think he's more dedicated to winning this argument. I think he's more dedicated to winning this argument than he is to winning football games.
But did he lose?
But that's the thing. I think he would have, if he would have paid back the $40 million, he would have viewed it as him winning. I view it as him losing.
Oh, sure.
That's $40 million.
Aaron Rodgers is only going to win one title in his career, and it's going to be because he's too stubborn. Mm-hmm. Like, and there's some other elements as to why he only won one title. It's because he's too much of a jerk. I mean, that's the problem, is he doesn't know when to turn it on and turn it off. Jordan was a jerk, but he knew when to turn it off. Those cameras were on. Michael Jordan was smiling, and he was hanging out with Oprah and eating McDonald's, and mm-hmm. he knew when to turn it off.
He's a likable guy.
Yes. Brady knows when to turn it off. Brady hates Belichick. He knows when to turn it off. Aaron doesn't. 615-737-1025. Again, Adam Schefter will have more details. Ian will be all over those for us. Coming up next, though, we have all of our categories of should win, win, will, you know, whatever with the Titans this season, our official expectations. Our expectations are high. Plus, the Titans made an addition we'll get to as well on the football team. But do we really think the Titans are that much better than the middle tier of their schedule? We'll discuss next. Stillman & Company, we are live from the Whole Sonic Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com and CSPN 102.5 The Game.